We had gotten so disgusted with the machine and so fed up with it that we decided to try to upgrade. We were lured by the iMac. Then we looked at the operating system and said, wow, this is possibly the best operating system I've ever seen. We plugged it in, she answered 4 questions, and she was surfing the internet. We were absolutely silent and stunned by this. It's not just for artists. It's not just for pointy-headed intellectuals from California. It's for us. It's for the programmers. It's for developers. This thing is an all-around computer. I can use this for everything. I'm Dave Haxton. I'm a programmer.
Hello! Welcome to the Best 30 Plus Minute Apple Conversation. You're going to hear all week long. I'm your host, Erfan Elijah. Join me today, he's the Admiral of the Ales, the Baron of the Brews. Leander Caney's here.
Hey, Erfan.
I got a chuckle on that. I knew I would. Also with us, if you see a big white candy van with white smoke billowing from the doors and windows, you've spotted him. Buster Caney is here.
It's too true.
Also with us, I'm so envious of him. Each morning, he gets to enjoy Leander Caney roaming the office in his skin-tight biking unitard, stretching, bending over to pick stuff up. He's living the dream. Lewis Wallace is here. Oh,
man, that's such a great description of my every beautiful morning.
There's nothing like Leander rolling in, taking off his bike helmet, reaching down to do that deep stretch, Lewis, in that full unitard outfit.
Clickety-clackety in those little bike shoes.
Right in front of your desk.
Just like a little pony.
Perks of the job. Well, great timing on Apple's behalf, because all the news that we were going to postulate about dropped right before we started recording the show. I love it when that happens. So we'll be talking about Apple's More in the Making event set for October 30th. Just like we thought it might be, we'll tell you what our hardware expectations are, and I'll tell you what the invitation means, because they couldn't have made it more obvious. I mean, I deciphered that thing after 10 seconds of looking at it. I knew exactly what Tim Cook was trying to communicate directly to me. So we'll tell you our hardware expectations. Plus, a bunch of YouTubers got early access to the iPhone XR. And those videos released today. And I got to say, it looks absolutely delicious. And I think I actually might get one of these. I'll tell you the differences between the iPhone XR and the iPhone XS. We'll just kind of run over what the main differences are. I think it's a compelling device. It's one of the best iPhones that Apple has ever made, in my opinion. And so we'll tell you all the cool stuff about that phone. We will talk about, oh, we got to at least mention this, the world's largest Mac collection is going up for sale. It could be yours for a steal. In fact, if you have a warehouse space where you could house it, the guy might just give you the collection.
Well, that's basically what he's saying, isn't it?
That's basically what he said, yeah. So if you have
a large
home.
I have an idea about this. We'll talk about it in a minute.
Really? Yeah. Okay, fantastic. We're going to wrap up the show with an all-new What We're Into. I've got something that I have been enjoying so thoroughly. I have been loving it for weeks now, so I'm excited to tell you guys all about that. Before we hop into the first story here, let me go ahead and say thank you to LinkedIn for supporting this episode. The right hire can make a huge impact on your business. That's why it's so important to find the right person. But where do you find people of high caliber like myself, like Leander Caney, like Buster? Well, these people are available on LinkedIn. And if you want to grow your business, you need to be looking for people on LinkedIn. It's the world's largest professional network. People go to LinkedIn every day to grow professionally and discover new job opportunities. 70% of the U.S. workforce is already there. LinkedIn Jobs matches people to your role based on who they really are, their skills, their interests, and how open they are to new opportunities. This way, your job gets seen by more of the right people. Most LinkedIn members haven't recently visited the top job boards, but 9 out of 10 members are open to new opportunities, so you can only reach them on LinkedIn. That's why a new hire is made every 10 seconds using LinkedIn. Businesses rate LinkedIn 40% higher than job boards at delivering quality candidates. If you're looking for high caliber talent, and I mean of the highest caliber, like the kind on this podcast today, hurry over to LinkedIn.com/cultcast and get $50 off your first job post. LinkedIn.com/cultcast to get $50 off your first post. Terms and conditions do apply. LinkedIn.com/cultcast. Okay, first story. I love it when this happens. October 30th, unfortunately, at 10 a.m. Eastern. Did you guys catch that part?
Ouch.
10 a.m. Eastern? Yes. So I might catch the replay of this.
Of this keto. At 10 p.m. Eastern.
Yeah, exactly. that's more my style. I know I'll be awake by then. So Apple has announced their hardware event for October. And interestingly, it's going to be held in New York City, not in Cupertino at the Steve Jobs Theater. But I'll tell you what, if you were a Cult Club member, you're welcome to come watch this in our Tim Cook Theater. We've just completed construction on it. It has the most comfortable executive chairs in the entire theater industry. And while most theaters just have plain screens or an IMAX screen, we have IMAX, y'all, screens. It's 240 feet from corner to corner. And, of course, you have full access to the Cult Club facilities and the walk-in commercial-grade Stella Artois refrigerator. So we'll have that broadcast up. You're welcome to join us if you're a member. If not, well, you can just watch it on your computer. But 7 a.m. Pacific, 10 a.m. Eastern, I looked at the invitation, and clear as day, it absolutely means we're getting new iPads, and I think we're getting a new Apple Pencil, because all those pictures of the Apple logo were drawn in all these different hands. It was like giving kids an art project. Right, it's an educational type event. You ask a kid to draw some type of artwork, and they each come up with their own different version. Clearly, iPads with new iPad pencils.
Why are they doing it at the School of Music then?
Well, I don't know. Maybe it has a beautiful theater. Maybe they're going to release the eye trombone. I don't know.
The eye trumpet, right.
Would that not be incredible to have Tim Cook come out and release the eye trombone and start demoing it on stage? He looks like the type of guy that would actually play the trombone.
He looks more like an ocarina type of guy.
A what? Ocarina?
Plays it on what are they called? A theremin.
What's that?
Man, Leander, you're dropping too much knowledge on us right now.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Two electronic instruments. The theremin makes a weird sound.
Oh, I can't believe you know the name of that.
I'm sorry, did you say ocarina is electronic?
No, I thought I was thinking of the
iPhone one.
Oh.
Wasn't there one that you kind of whistled into the microphone and it made a sound?
Yeah, I thought you were talking about the iPhone game. I have no idea. Yeah, or the Zelda game.
Yeah, I thought you were talking about Ocarina of Time for a moment, too. Totally, but then I caught Macarena, and I bet that is Tim Cook's favorite
but
dance.
But now I do remember when they came out with that Ocarina app, but that was like when the iPhone first came out.
Right.
Yeah, that's an old school reference right there.
Wait, an Ocarina app? What was it, like a musical app?
It was like, yeah, it was by Smule, S-M-U-L-E, and they used to have like this app where it was like kind of like an Ocarina from the Zelda game where you blow into the microphone to like play this instrument, and based on how hard you blew, it would play it harder, stronger.
I never even made that connection from Ocarina of Time, because an ocarina is like a type of like, it's like a four-piped flute, right?
So I think so, right? Yeah. Like almost potatoes. Like a tuning flute. Yeah.
They're shaped like potatoes. This is the strangest opening segment of Cultcast I think we've ever had. For the first 4 minutes, I'm like, I literally don't even know what we're talking about right now. Someone's talking about potatoes. We're talking about flutes. I mean, what is going on? Okay, well, maybe we'll see an eye trombone. Regardless, I think we're going to see iPads for sure. And someone in the Cult Club cheekily said it's probably going to be called the number 2 pencil.
Clever.
Good one, right?
Yeah, not bad.
I thought that was pretty good. So what else do you think that we'll see at this event? Buster, any predictions?
Oh my gosh, iPads and probably some Macs and some cool software too.
I'm thinking on the edge
some
of my seat.
Creation software for Macs and iPads. So boom, you heard it here first.
Well, I think we're going to get the low-cost MacBook. So whatever that ends up being, I don't know if it's going to be a MacBook Air or just a regular MacBook, but that will probably make an appearance.
With it. Yeah, cool.
And the big question is whether or not we'll see the Mac Mini, because that's been rumored. It seems like Apple has a product that is ready to be released sometime. And do you think we'll see it at this event, though, Buster?
Oh, I think they're going to announce it. They're going to show us the Mac Mini. But like the Air Power, they're just going to hold us in suspense for another 2 to 3 years.
They'll have a picture of it on their website just to prove that it does exist, but they'll never actually release it.
It's coming, guys. Don't worry.
They are in a real pickle over AirPods, I think, because they announced the Air Power Mat, and it was going to be one of the marquee features of the AirPods. And now that the Air Power Mat isn't ready, I feel like it's holding up the AirPods show. Everyone is waiting for new AirPods, and people don't want to buy AirPods right now because it feels like Apple's on the cusp of releasing an updated version. But I don't know how Apple can do that without talking about the Air Power Mat. They either have to tell us when the Air Power Mat is going to be available, or they have to admit that the entire thing is totally foobarred and it's not going to materialize anytime soon. They can't just release the AirPods without addressing that issue.
Yes.
Leander, I feel like you were about to say something extremely clever.
Right. It's a pickle.
It's a real pickle.
They're in a pickle.
In fact, I can just imagine Tim Cook. He's in the executive lounge. He's like, we're in a pickle, y'all. A real pickle, y'all. And everyone's nodding enthusiastically because they don't know what to do. And meanwhile, I have people, I would say the number one question I get from people about new products, whether you're in the cult club, on Twitter, when are we going to see new AirPods? And I would imagine soon, but it could be later in 2019 if they decide to hold those back and wait until the Air Power Mat is ready. Of course, we saw those stories a while ago where engineers were saying that it wasn't going to work at all.
Right,
so they didn't know how they're going to release it.
If they haven't done it by now, they're never going to do it. It's been so long, and
wouldn't that be crazy if Apple announced the product and then just said, "Oh, by the way, we're not going to do it"?
Yeah, right.
Would that be unprecedented? Leander, have you ever heard of a situation like that happening before?
I can't think
before?
Of one
now. Sorry, that's how embarrassing. Like vaporware deluxe on you guys.
Yeah.
Did you salivate too hard on that? Yeah.
This is why. Correct me if I'm wrong here, Leander, but isn't this why Steve Jobs didn't let Apple announce products before they were done?
Yeah.
This is exactly why.
You hit the nail on the head right there, yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if that was a set-in-stone philosophy that he had or if that was a philosophy that Apple had and he just kind of went along with it. But since he's been gone, they do that more and more now.
Well, it used to be in stark contrast to Microsoft because Microsoft was so aggressive that they would announce all kinds of crazy stuff just to, you know, put a damper on the market. Like if a competitor came out with some kind of product, Microsoft in Italy, you know, announced some kind of alternative, and then of course, you know, no one would buy the competitor's product. So I'm surprised that they did this without them being really, really close. Like, it is really, really a weird puzzle because, like I said, it's unprecedented. Apple, as far as I know, has never done this.
And here we are, over a year later, they announced the Air Power Mats when the iPhone X launched, and we don't know anything about it to this point. So, if you're expecting AirPods at this event, who knows what will happen? I could see Apple just releasing the AirPods with always on Siri and just calling it good. But that wireless case was something they talked about, and they've talked about it since. And then, poof, it's just gone. So I feel like they have to address it somehow.
There's nothing to stop the wireless case from coming without the AirPower.
Well, why would they release a wireless case without the Air Power Mat?
Because everybody's already got wireless charging mats.
Yeah, wireless chargers. I mean, so I don't think those have to go hand in hand.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a good point. So if it's like compatible with other wireless chargers, it wouldn't matter.
Yeah.
But it still puts the spotlight on the empty pedestal where the Air Power Mat's supposed to be, right? It's like, here's the wireless charging case for your AirPods, y'all. And everyone's waiting for the Air Power Mat. He's like, all right, let's move on.
Yeah. I think at this point, Apple's just like hoping if they don't say anything about it, nobody else will say anything about it and it'll just go away type
That's
of thing,
really
you
funny.
Know.
Let's just try not to address it and hope everyone forgets. Yeah, scrub it from our website almost entirely. So are we going to be doing any type of live blog for this, Leander?
Oh, 7 a.m.? Yeah, we're all over it, yeah.
Are you going to have the UK guys stay up late to do this or something?
Yeah, they're going to be staying up for 48 hours, maybe even 2 hours, blogging every single thing.
Send Lewis over there with his retractable car antenna whip. I'll keep him up.
What do you think, you know, the music school thing, you think there might be some new Beats headphones?
I don't think, they just announced headphones. I just think it's like more of, kind of like when they had the other iPod announcement this year, it was at a school,
right? Because they were pushing the education angle, right?
So. Right, and so I think like this is supposed to push like the creativity angle, like, oh, we're here at this beautiful place where, you know, operas and shit are done, and now we have these amazing Macs and iPads for you to create beautiful art and shit for,
have you ever been to that place? I mean, it sounds like they got a lot of stuff going on there.
At the place, that the Brooklyn place?
Yeah.
No, I'm a West Coaster for life. I don't go over there.
Have you been to New York?
Like when I was like 9.
And why would you ask him that, Lewis?
Yeah.
I wasn't specifically asking Buster.
How is that opera theater there? Buster, tell us all about it. He's like, I've never been to New York. I'm not sure.
Did the invite say it was at the opera part of it?
No, but I it's like a 21,000 or 2,100 seat opera house or where they're hosting it, which... P.S. Why didn't we get an invite? That's a fat diss.
Yeah, what the hell,
the spam
Leander?
Folder.
Yeah, check the spam folder. It's probably in there.
Checking it now.
It's okay. Probably got a custom Cult of Mac logo on the invite.
Custom designed by Johnny Ive and team. They've been working on it all week. They're going to be very disappointed if you don't see it.
An Apple logo made out of shaved hair.
Wow. That would be very special indeed. Well, while Leander searches the spam folder for the invitation that's definitely in there, let's talk about the iPhone XR. So I love that Apple's doing this. So with the XS, I can't get myself to stop. Yeah, the XS.
Don't ever.
The XS match and the XS, Apple gave the phones to a bunch of really mega popular YouTubers, like the most popular ones on YouTube, and they all did a bunch of videos drooling all over it. Well, this time they did the same thing, but they gave the XR to a bunch of smaller YouTubers. I mean, some with only 100,000 subscribers. So really, I mean, in Apple's eyes, really small channels. The XS and the XS Match were given to people with millions and millions of subscribers. So people have been featuring the phone all day on YouTube. I gotta say, this looks like a really compelling phone. And Leander, you were asking me before we started recording, am I thinking about getting one? I'm seriously thinking about getting one because the 64 gigabyte model, which is the one I would get, is only $749. That's in the world of iPhones, that's Apple practically giving it to you for free. Yeah.
Wow, they have really won you over with their pricing strategy, because now you think $750 is cheap.
Yeah. That's what they've done to us, right? Remember when this used to be the standard price of their top-tier iPhone, and now it's like their bargain model?
Yeah. Giving it
but
away.
It's not a bargain phone in any regard. I think it's easy to confuse this phone with the iPhone 5C, because it has all the different whimsical colors and stuff, but this is not the same class of phone as the iPhone 5C. This is a premium phone from all respects. Buster, we're gonna say something.
It's a premium phone that comes with an LCD screen and one camera lens on the back.
Is that disappointed, Buster, or is that impressed, Buster?
That's disappointed. I mean, you know, not that I need those things. I'm just saying, it looks really great for the price. But also for $750, when you put it that way, that actually makes me like, oh, Kyle, you're already spending $750. Why not spend an extra $1,000 and get an XS?
But are you getting that much more for your extra 25% or 30% in cost, since I can't math on the fly?
So there was one feature on the XR that really stands out to me, and that's portrait mode, even though it doesn't work on...
Hell?
Sorry, that was my modem dropping. Don't worry.
This is what happens when you broadcast live from a van.
Yeah. Anyway, but portrait mode on the XR. So if you've taken it on like the XX, you know, like when you have like portrait mode, you have to stand back like to get everybody in the frame. Whereas with on the XR, it all works with the wide angle lens. So you don't have to do that. So you can get more in the frame on portrait mode, which that's actually killer, because that's my biggest beef with using portrait mode. So
The XS uses the telephoto lens to do portrait mode, and the XR only has a wide angle lens, so it uses the wide angle lens and it uses computational photography algorithms to create that blur effect, and you get a much wider angle, which I thought to be a compelling feature at all as well, because I like the wider angle photos.
Yeah.
I like wider angle lenses generally over telephoto lenses. So I think that's gonna be a feature that I would probably really like. Let me run through, well, first of all, I should mention, the pre-orders go on sale tonight. If you're in the U.S., Thursday night, a.k.a. 12:01 a.m. Friday morning, the pre-orders go on sale, and the phone begins shipping on the 26th. Let me run through why I think the 10R is so compelling. So many of you know this already, but let me just run through the features. It has pretty much all the same internals as the 10S. It has the same faster Face ID and true depth camera system, the same A12 Bionic, the same 8-core neural engine, which Lewis loves neural engines. He was saying that about the 10S. It features True Tone and a wide color gamut. It has dual SIM, the same 25% louder speakers. It has the same wide angle rear camera and smart HDR capabilities as the 10S and 10S Match. And it has computational portrait mode with the wide angle lens, as Buster mentioned. Here's the big thing. The battery life is up to 25% longer than the 10S. It even bests or matches the 10S Match, the 10S Max, in battery performance. So it's either the same or better than the 10S Match in battery performance. It gets 1.5 hours longer battery life than the iPhone 8 Plus. So the battery life on this thing is better than any iPhone that Apple's ever made. And it starts at just $749. Plus, if you see the videos that are out on YouTube, I think it's a good-looking phone, Buster. Did you see any of the videos?
Yeah, I actually did a post on cultofmac.com. Don't know if you guys heard about it. But I rounded up some of the most popular YouTube videos of the iPhone XR. And ooh, I watched all of them, actually. They were pretty all... Everybody was raving about how awesome the XR is. And so now I feel really bad that I spent $1,200 on an iPhone XS Max.
Don't worry, it'll soon be at the bottom of a lake somewhere.
Yeah, you'll lose it soon enough, and then you can go replace it with a XR. So what did you think about the aesthetic? Because it's like the Apple Watch Sport Edition. They have like the aluminum body, and plus they colored the aluminum to match the color of the phone. I think it looks sexy as heck.
I think what one person said in their review, I think it was Mashable, was like it feels like a flagship phone. So even though, yeah, it's the cheaper phone, the more colorful phone, everything about it feels like you have the latest and greatest iPhone. You like the screen is not quite as good as the actual latest and greatest, and the camera is not quite as good, but in some ways better, you know, than the iPhone XS. So it's hard to not go with it. Also, it doesn't have 3D touch. But
it has, yeah, they call it haptic touch because it doesn't
have
3D
touch.
Who
cares?
Nobody
cares about that. So it's like there's three things that it's missing that the iPhone XS has. And that, like, you're not going to miss out on those really much at all.
Right. I think they did a really good job eliminating the features that people probably don't care about.
Right.
And keeping all the features that make the iPhone XS powerful and the camera beautiful. So one of the other interesting things I thought about the XR is... Well, first of all, it has an LCD display, as you mentioned, but it doesn't seem like it's some cheap budget LCD display. Apple says it's the best LCD in the industry. And the XR is 6.1 inches versus the iPhone XS 5.5 or 5.8, I should say, and the XS Match 6.5. So it's right in the middle size-wise. So if the XS is too small for you, but you feel like the XS Match is too big, this might be the perfect size for you, and you might get that big screen effect without, and also be able to fit it in the pocket of your skinny jeans or extremely short shorts in Buster's case. It is missing the telephoto cam of the XS and XS Match. It's got 3 gigs of RAM versus the XS's 4 gigs. It has a 600 megabit LTE radio versus the faster gigabit radio of the XS, but I doubt you'll really notice a difference. And it's missing 3D touch. It's not as waterproof as the XS and XS Match. It's only, I think, IP67 rated, so you can drop it into up to a foot of water for 30 minutes as opposed to 3 feet of water. And it's heavier. It's 10% heavier than the XS is, and it's also slightly thicker, which I've heard several people make comments about. But haven't we always said we don't care if Apple makes devices thicker as long as they give us better battery life? Yeah. Buster, that's something you and I have said 1,000 times.
Yeah, and you know what? The XS Max, the battery life is not that much better. So I would like to take a qualm with Apple on that. So
I've actually heard several people report the same thing, like the battery life seems about the same as the 10.
Yeah.
Which is surprising because it's a larger phone with a bigger battery.
It's the biggest battery Apple's ever put in an iPhone, is what Tim Cook told me. But I don't feel it over here, that's for sure.
Huh. So there you have it. I mean, all of that stuff, you look at the pros, you look at the cons. I think the 10R is a extremely compelling phone, and I think it's going to sell a bazillion units.
Bazillion.
And yeah,
certified.
It very well might, it might sell 1 to 2 bazillion units, and I'm not the only one that thinks that. Ming-Chi Kuo, he thinks it's going to be such a huge hit that he actually just upped his fourth quarter estimates for the phone by 10%, which I don't know how you gauge demand. How does he gauge demand better than Apple? I mean, doesn't Apple know their customers better than Ming-Chi Kuo, and yet he's raising his estimates for the phone? Maybe he's raising them based upon the amount of components that Apple is ordering or something?
Yeah, I'm guessing that he's basing it based on supply chain sources and how much Apple's ordering and expecting.
Now, Leander, I have a feeling I know what your answer is going to be. It's going to include the word astonishing. But what are your thoughts on the 10R?
Well, yeah, it looks...
astonishing?
I'm not going to say that. I know you're trying to push me there, but I'm not going to. Yeah, it looks like a really great phone. It's a puzzle, though, isn't it? Like we were just saying, it has almost... It's so good that it doesn't really deserve to be the second string phone. But they're going to sell bazillions for sure. Did someone fall out of a van?
This is like Buster just... Yeah. Gee whiz.
Are you driving the van while you're doing this?
I think he just hit the vape too hard. He just rolled out the side door. I think what he actually did was just... I think he just unplugged his mic, but we'll see if he comes back. Because all of a sudden, his background noise, the reverberance from a steel van is absent from our podcast. I heard someone say this in one of the YouTube reviews. I wish I remember who it was, but it was a really good point. And they said that Apple is going to have these 10R on a table right next to the 10S's on another table. So there's no way the screen is going to be that much different from the one in the 10S, because Apple's going to have them side by side. People are going to be able to look from one screen to the next screen. And if the 10R had a noticeably lower quality screen, people aren't going to buy it, because it's going to make the phone look really bad.
I don't think people do that in the store, to be honest. I don't think people know, you know? Like, people aren't... A lot of people aren't really that discerning. Especially for people who are going to go for the XR. I don't think they're going to take it over to the XS and look at them side by side. Some might, but I think most people won't.
Well, that's probably where... Probably if you didn't look at them side by side, you wouldn't notice,
you wouldn't notice.
I mean, but... I wonder just how different it's going to be. I mean, I haven't watched any of those videos today. Did anybody compare one to the other and say, oh, no difference, or, oh, look how different?
Some people did. There was maybe one video that I saw where the person was comparing the screen quality of the 10S and the 10R side by side, but they said it looked pretty much the same, which I don't believe. I mean, one is LCD and one is OLED, and OLEDs have much better contrast ratios. They have much blacker blacks, in fact, true blacks, because the pixels can just turn themselves off. And the LED has a backlight, so... Are you back with us, Buster?
I heard your comment. But what I was trying to say before is, other people that had tested them, they said there wasn't a big difference in
was
the
not?
Screens. Yeah, they said, especially if you're coming from like the iPhone 7 to the iPhone 8 or iPhone 8 to that iPhone XR, you're not going to notice any difference because it's the same pixel count. So if you're going from a 10 to a 10R, then yeah, you'd probably possibly notice. But they said like, visually, it looks pretty similar, which I think, like, with the 10S and 10S Max, that's kind of the point where you're at a point where it's like, oh, these displays all look amazing at this point, you know?
I feel like LED has a characteristically different look than OLED does, or LCD has a characteristically different look than OLED. And I like the look of LCDs because they have that backlight. They're things that are bright in the image have a much... brighter look to them, whereas on OLED screens, like reflections, like if you look at like the sparkles on like a piece of jewelry or something, they just look muted because OLEDs don't have the capability to get as bright as LCDs do. So if you like the look of LCDs, you might actually like the look of the XR screen more than you would the OLED, because the OLED, the colors are more accurate and there's more contrast, but it doesn't have the same level of brilliance as an LCD screen with a backlight.
Is that
so? Okay, yeah. It just depends on what you're looking at. Yeah. In fact, I have a plasma television, which is very similar to OLED in that each pixel is self-illuminating and can turn itself on and off. And I think my next TV is probably going to be an LCD because even though the colors are more accurate on a plasma and an OLED TV, like when you're watching movies and there's lots of like bright lights or explosions or like city lights, you lose a lot of that luminescence and that feel like the sparkle because it just isn't very bright on a plasma or OLED TV. So go look at it in person. That's what I'm going to do. I'm not going to pre-order it. I'm going to go into the store and I'm going to look at it and I'm going to mull it over. I mean, I'm already spending so much money. I want to get a new microphone. That's like $1,000. And I want to get the new Fuji XT1 Buster, which is so
sexy.
There's all these gadgets I want. And I'm like, I can't buy everything, clearly. So I have to decide what I want.
Yeah, just sell a kidney or two, and you'll be fine.
I decided to sell both because I figured your kidneys pretty much just do what your liver does, right?
Yeah, right.
So as long as you still have that, I think you're going to be fine. And I also want the new iPad. I'm absolutely, like, highest on my list, iPad. I am getting that new iPad. I might even get the pencil, and then we'll take it from there. But I also want the new Fuji X-T3, which looks like an incredible camera. It's the two versions newer than the camera that I've talked about incessantly on this show, the X-T1. I keep trying to get them to send me a review unit before I buy one. Dude. Radio silence over at Fujifilm. I cannot get them to reply back to me.
Oh, man, that's almost like a blacklisted? Challenge. I'm going to see if I can get one.
Yeah, good luck with that, man. I've emailed just about everyone I could think of. This is inside talk. I can't broadcast this part of the show, so never mind. I was going to talk about the last contact that I had a great relationship with. Anyway, let's go ahead and move on. We got to talk about the world's largest Mac collection, and then we'll wrap up with an all-new what we're into. And before I do that, let me give a quick and very hearty thank you to Casper for supporting this episode. Casper is a sleep brand that continues to revolutionize its line of products to create an exceptionally comfortable sleep experience one night at a time. Now they have three mattress models. They have the original Casper, the Wave, and the Essential. Casper mattresses are perfectly designed to soothe and cradle your natural shapes, Lewis. And curvy geometry. Not to mention, the breathable design helps you sleep cool and regulates your body temperature so you're not sweating profusely all throughout the night like Leander Caney does. And it's delivered right to your door in a small, how do they do that size box with free shipping and returns in the US and Canada. But the best part is you can be sure of your purchase with Casper's 100-night risk-free sleep on it trial. Here's what you do. Are you waking up with aches and pains at night? With your limbs asleep, with neck pain in the morning, it might just be your bed. Here's what you should try. Take your mattress, prop it up against the wall, order the Casper, have it in your room, sleep on it for a month, 2 months, and see how you feel in the morning. If you decide that the Casper is not for you, you can actually return it to Casper, and they will come, they'll pick it up, and they'll refund 100% of your money. Plus, if you head on over to casper.com/cultcast, you can use code cultcast at checkout and you'll get $50 towards select mattresses at casper.com/cultcast. The code to use is cultcast. Terms and conditions do apply. Okay, let's talk about this absolutely fantastic Mac collection. That's, I think, one of the best in the world, according to this story. And the guy is just trying to give it away because his collection is so large, he doesn't have a place to keep it anymore, and I guess he has gotten himself in a real pickle. Two pickles in one episode? You better believe it. This is even worse than the AirPods pickle. The guy's collection's gotten so large that he can't afford to house these Macs anywhere, and he's like 25 to 30,000 euros behind on his rent. And so his landlord's like, if you don't get these damn Apple 2GSs out of my warehouse, I'm going to shred them. And so the guy is literally trying to give away his collection. And if you'll pay his back rent, he'll just give you this amazing collection of Macs. And I have to imagine this collection has got to be worth more than 30,000 euros, Leander. What do you think? I mean, there's some serious artifacts in this collection.
Yeah, it looked like an amazing collection. It looks like it has a ton of stuff. And a lot of it is boxed up. And multiple copies of each machine. Like, I saw a whole bunch of colorful-looking iMacs there. He had like printers, laser writers, the old original Macs, the Mac Plus, Mac Classic.
Wow.
It was crazy. It's a crazy looking, like a whole bunch of stuff. But, you know, like you said, I mean, I don't know. It's hard to have a collection like that. You know, it's hard to, where are you going to keep it? How are you going to keep it updated? You know, like, I mean, sort of look after it. Because this stuff rots.
Who are you going to show it to that's actually going to be interested in it?
Who's going to pay you to look at it? Yeah, right. Nobody. It belongs in, like, the Smithsonian or something.
Honestly, yeah. Like, I mean, I'm an Apple fan, and if you showed me a bunch of those computers, I'd be like, cool. Sweet.
But this is something that if they put, like, we have a museum here called the Experience Music Project, and it's like a pop culture museum, and they always have cool things going through. They'll have all the props and all the movie stuff from Star Trek movies, you know, from like 50 years ago. They'll have that kind of stuff go through. This would be the perfect kind of collection for a museum like that, where you could walk through and see all these different pop culture exhibits, but then one of the exhibits might be the history of Mac, and you can walk through and see every product that Apple has created for like the last 40 years. That would be a cool exhibit to see. I just hope that he's able to find a museum that will pay him for this, and he gets to make some of his money back, because it's such a shame for him to... I mean, this collection had to have cost him tens of thousands of dollars. Well, I hope he makes some of his money back and doesn't just end up giving it away.
Well, you know, Benji Edwards is a journalist. He's and he specializes in sort of vintage tech. And he had to move house, so he was trying to get rid of his... he had a big collection of old computers. And, you know, it's kind of hard. Like, I don't know if he was paying people, but he was almost at that point, I think, like paying people to take it off his hands, you know, because no one really wants to, you know, to have these things. You know, you got to have a lot of resources to, you know, to actually sort of like, you know, make use of them. There's another kid as well that Dave Pierini wrote about. He's based in the East Coast. He had a huge collection of stuff. And again, it became like a real burden for him. Luckily, he donated it. He was going to start his own museum. And I think it was, he had to jump through a bunch of hoops. The city council where he lived in this small town on the East Coast somewhere donated like a hall that they had for him to open it up. But then he was worried about, you know, security and electricity and, you know, like actually when is he going to open this thing up to the public? How is he going to do that? You know, I mean, it takes a lot of resources to run even a small museum. So it was, you know, he ended up donating his to someone else who actually owned an old CompUSA, and they have their own private, they're trying to open up their own private museum in this giant CompUSA that went out of business, which we also wrote about, which Dave wrote about. But yeah, it takes, it's tough to do. It's like a lot of work. It's a lot, and it's a lot of, you know, a lot of money to be able to do this properly. Which
I don't think that's going to work. You can't have a computer museum. Who's going to go? It's like going to a pinball museum. That's a cool exhibit, but who's going to go to a museum just to see a bunch of Macs? I'm not even sure that I would go to pay to see that. It has to be part of a larger museum.
That's my point, yeah. Just seeing a bunch of Macs is cool, but
I don't know.
Trying to, like, it would have to be a museum or an exhibit that shows their place in history explains their importance. Yeah, exactly. Like just seeing the machinery itself wouldn't turn me on by any means.
You'd have to be able to sit down and run, you know, some old games or something.
Like what if you had like the history of Microsoft, the history of IBM, you know, like all these different the history of Microsoft, I guess they didn't make computers. The history of IBM, the history of other computer manufacturers, PC manufacturers, and also like all these Apple computers in their own exhibit. That would be pretty cool. And especially if they had other exhibits, like if you could see something else from pop culture history. I think he's going to be able to sell these. At the very least, he should partner with someone who has like an eBay business and just sell the crap on eBay. Dude, what are you doing? Just sell it on eBay.
Well, I think people don't buy that stuff. And I've done stories about how an iMac box, the cardboard box that an iMac came in, will sell for much, much more than the iMac itself. Because, you know, they're much rarer. People didn't keep the boxes. They threw them out. But, you know, you can pick up, like, an old original iMac for next to nothing. No one wants them anymore.
I think you can get, like, an original Next on eBay for, like, $300.
I'm surprised it's that much, to be honest.
It's an amazing historical piece. If I had a big enough house, I would absolutely keep one of those somewhere in the house. Of course, I want it to turn on and actually be able to do something. I don't want it just sitting there gathering dust, I guess.
Yeah, right. I had a an idea. You know, I wonder whether the Cult of Mac readers would be interested in like getting together and crowdfunding, buying this collection from this guy. But then I was like, oh, right. But then, well, then what are we going to do?
What are you going to do with that? I had the exact same idea.
Your basement.
Basement. Yeah.
Yeah, you got plenty of room in that basement of yours.
I don't have any room at all. It's completely.
If you evict all the spiders and raccoons, you'll have space.
And all the old furniture and the boxes of junk and
the boxes of iPhone cases from 2007 and 2008.
Exactly. That's exactly what it's full of. It's so full of stuff. And none of us can bear to go down there. And we can't even bear to deal with it, but we've got to at some point. I just want to get like a...
That's why this is the perfect place for this collection, because it's where gadgets go to die, right. Your basement. It's like the gadget cemetery, you know? So it's perfect. We'll buy all that stuff, put it in your basement, and we'll never talk about it again. No, but that's funny that you should mention that, because I had the exact same idea. I was like, we should start like a Kickstarter or something, but... The guy's in the UK. How are you going to ship all that stuff over here? And then what the hell are you going to do with it?
He's in Austria, isn't he?
He's in Vienna. Sorry, I thought he was in the UK.
Pretty close to Charlie.
There you go. There you go. Charlie can fit all this stuff in his 800-square-foot apartment in Berlin.
800. Perfect. I think it's more like 80 square feet.
Yeah, it might be more closer to that, actually. And I would love to help the guy. I just don't know what we could do for him. Because even if you paid off his bill... He's still going to get himself in the same situation. I mean, someone needs to take this collection from him. Maybe I can call the people at the Experience Music Project, which is the museum I was talking about, and see if they'll take it. That would be at least a place where people could come and look at it. And I feel like those computers would do really well in Seattle, you know, with the large tech crowd that we have here. Anyway, we'll include a link to this story. Maybe you have an idea to help this guy. Maybe you want to buy the collection from him. Or donate a few bucks to his cause to help him pay his 30,000 euro overdue warehouse bills. But let's move on to the last segment. What we're into. This is the segment where we talk about the stuff that doesn't normally fit into the broader structure of the show. It may not be technology related. It might be a television show, a movie, a video game, something that we are currently loving. Maybe you're living in your van down by the river and you want to talk about how peaceful that is, as Buster is probably about to. Buster, do you want to go first, since I know your internet might disappear at any moment?
That's probably a good idea, you know? I was just going to say I'm into... God, I have to choose two. Or no, I have to choose one of the two. Super NES Classic. That thing is awesome. So let me tell you what I did with the van. Future Fave and Rave pick, I have a projector.
That projects on the side. I mean, I guess it basically is one giant white screen, huh?
You got it. Yeah. It's a battery powered projector, and I bought an SNES Classic to go with it. And I'm just telling you, campouts with the van, oh my gosh, they're just next level now. You got Super Punch Out, you got Super Smash Brothers, you got Street Fighter. So many games that can happen on the side of my van now when we're partying. It's wild.
People dancing on the top, gaming on the side.
People passing out shoulders. And smoke billowing out from behind.
Hey, you got space for a second bedroom in that
van?
Dude,
yeah, I do. Anytime you want to come, I took out the passenger seat so we can just put a bed there if you want to move.
I don't mind sleeping in the passenger seat.
Curled up in the footwell.
Yeah.
I'll just put my head back. No problem. I'll fall asleep right there. Whew, baby, this candy van just keeps getting sweeter.
Oh, so good. But you know, when everybody was talking about the NES Classic and like how big of a thing that was, I kind of thought that was stupid. But then I bought an SNES Classic at Best Buy 2 weeks ago or so, and I believed in the hype. It's like $80 for like some of all of your favorite classic childhood games. So
how many games on it?
That's a good question.
I think it's 20.
Yeah, really? It's about 20-ish. It's not enough, that's for sure. Like, I want to hack it so I can put more games on it, but it's a solid entertainment piece.
No, so I bought the same thing, and I was going to promote it on a future show. Yeah, and it's not just that it has all these great games. The whimsical nature of the OS that has been programmed onto it. I mean, from the moment you turn on the console, it's like a Disneyland-grade experience. The entire thing, from start to finish, is so magical. It makes you feel like you're a kid again. At least that's how I felt. And it had all my favorite games from when I had a Super Nintendo. I took that Super Nintendo Classic to a, I went on vacation to this cabin in the woods. And my friends played it the entire time we were there. Like, we didn't go outside at all. All we did was play Super Mario, Donkey Kong Country.
Yes.
We played that game almost the entire time.
It's addictive. Yeah, I'm surprised. Like, I've played so much Zelda. Oh, it's been ridiculous. Yeah.
And my friend also bought his Chinese SNES knockoff, which had like 600 games on it.
Oh, that's cheating.
It's a night and day difference because that game is just a bunch of emulators. The games look like crap. They haven't been remodeled for an HD screen.
Yeah.
And the OS is terrible. It's hard to navigate. You don't really know exactly what game you're launching because all the titles of the games are things that you've never heard of before. They're not like the actual titles of the actual games. So it just shows you how much craftsmanship and attention to detail went into Nintendo's Super Nintendo Classic. That I'm telling you, Nintendo, they're having a
renaissance.
A renaissance. That's exactly the word I was trying to think of. Yeah, they are creating some of the best products they've ever made in the existence of their company. And I've got a Nintendo product to pitch as well, but I don't want to do two back-to-back Nintendo items, so we'll let someone else go. But was there anything else you wanted to add, Buster?
Nah, just get a Super Nintendo Classic. Whew. Boom.
On the candy van, no less.
Yeah.
On the candy van. Okay. Lewis, what do you got for us?
I got another one of these TV shows that my wife turned me on to. Somehow she gets to see all these things before I do. I don't know.
Well, she's a professor, right?
You're right.
So she works like 3 hours a week.
Yeah, there's that. But it's a solid 6 or 8 months a year.
Uh-huh. Oh, right. You mean she works 3 hours a week for 6 to 8 months?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's why she has so much time for shows.
So this is a HBO show. It's called Barry. You ever heard of this?
Oh, yeah.
Barry.
It's good.
Is it with an E or an A?
Yeah.
B-A-R-R-Y. Okay. I'd never even heard of this show. I mean, she's like, oh, yeah, I've been watching this show. But I'm like, what? Literally never heard of it. It's a dark comedy about this lonely Midwestern hitman who gets tired of offing people and winds up in L.A. and he winds up going to this acting school. The lead character is played by Bill Hader. You know him from Saturday Night
Live. I heard
about
this show.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
Yeah. So, I've never seen it, though.
Yeah, well, he's great as this, you know, nerdy, maladjusted ex-Marine who, you know, works for this manipulative handler guy. But the real gem is Henry Winkler. Remember him?
Henry Winkler's still alive,
the
A
Fonz.
And B in this show.
he plays the acting class instructor, this guy named Gene Cousineau. And I don't think I've seen him. I must have seen him do something, but honestly, I don't remember anything he's done since Happy Days. And so he plays this teacher. He's like incredibly blunt, you know, and his students are just, you know, horrible, horrible actors. You know, he's completely like just brutally honest with them. You know, he's to the point of being abusive. but he also, you know, you could tell he actually does care about acting, and he does actually, I think he cares about the students, although, like, one of the running themes is like, we're taking the day off because of this tragedy, but, you know, it is a full day, and everybody will be paying the entire price for the day's class. So he's, you know, he's kind of a loser, he's kind of a schlub, and he's also kind of sleazy, you know? So he's got this, you know, guy who's a, you know, just started wanting to be an actor who's just actually a hitman, right? He's in it. So at some point, the cops become interested in this acting class, right, for reasons you can probably imagine. And a female detective kind of gets fixated on Barry as a possible suspect in this murder. And Winkler's character gets fixated on the detective. And so he's like hitting on her and doing it. It's really weird seeing this, you know, frumpy former Fonz hitting on this detective. And, it, you know, he's all of his scenes, he's really like just chewing the scenery. It's pretty awesome. You know, show about a hitman. So, you know, it does go some pretty dark places, but it's mostly a comedy despite the occasional murder. Barry and his handler get wrapped up in a war between these dumbass Chechen mobsters and these short ass Bolivian drug dealers, and it's pretty good, man. First show or first season came out this spring. I burned through, I think it's 8 episodes in a week because I couldn't stop watching it. I'm not one of these persons who watch it all in one day. I don't know how people do that, but
I love that. It's like my dream.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, and like the season ender, no spoilers, is just like, it's a very lighthearted show most of the season until like the last episode and like the season, like the last scene, you're like, oh man, this show is also like very serious at the same time. Like,
yeah,
it's great.
It's a very, that was a pretty shocking. And Hader and Winkler both won Emmy Awards, you know, for Outstanding Lead Actor in a Comedy and Supporting Actor. Got 13 nominations and best news of all, been renewed for a second season.
What network is this on again?
HBO.
I'm so happy to see that Bill Hader is doing something with his career, because he was one of my favorite parts of Saturday Night Live. He's one of those guys that can always make me laugh. Like, no matter what he does, I just think he's hilarious.
Yeah.
Is this a comedic performance for him or is it serious?
Both, probably.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, he's not the funniest part of it. I mean, he kind of plays a, you know, just kind of a guy who's like lonely and disturbed, and you know, he realizes that he wants to get out of this this hitman profession, but you know, he's a hitman. And
wait, so Bill Hader's a hitman?
Yeah.
And like,
oh, sorry, did I not get this all clear?
I didn't catch that part. That is funny. Like, his particular character, his particular personality, being a hitman, is hilarious.
Oh, but he's a hitman that wants to be an actor. That's like,
it's such
a great dichotomy.
I must have missed the first part of this. Did you say that when we first started describing it?
Yeah.
I was spacing out and just looking at the ceiling.
I tried to, but who knows? Yeah, it's funny because, I mean, he is a hilarious guy, but he's just kind of more deadpan and I don't know, creepy in a way. You know, he's definitely messed up in the head, and his social skills are lacking. And, you know, he has it's just hilarious. You know, he decides he wants to be an actor because, like, here's something he can do that's kind of normal. And he, you know, of course, falls for the hot chick in his class. I'm sorry, did I say chick? The really attractive and semi-talented actress.
Yes.
I'm sorry, did I say actress? Female actor.
Actor.
Oh, God, just all kinds of wrong. Anyway, it is a funny show, but most of the comedy comes from Henry Winkler's character and the
Chechen gangsters.
Oh yeah, like, yeah, those guys are funny.
The lead Chechen gangster is hilarious.
Makes me laugh.
Yeah, but also just the horrible, horrible actors. You know, the wannabe LA. You know, they're all waiters and waitresses, and you know, trying out for TV shows, and you know, basically going through hell. And they're horrible. They're horrible actors. They got no business being out there doing it. And I don't know. I find it amusing. I can't wait for the next season. Don't know when that's coming out, but get caught up now on the first season. I think you'll like it.
Henry Winkler is one of my all-time favorite comedic performers. Like, and I'm only going by one single performance. His role in The Waterboy, he was the coach in The Waterboy, was one of the most memorable. You never saw that movie?
No.
He gives one of the most memorable comedic performances of any movie that I've seen. It was hilarious. Yeah. If you've never seen The Waterboy too, you should see it because it's a great movie.
Okay.
Do you like Adam Sandler?
Yeah.
I was going to watch it until he mentioned Adam Sandler.
Oh, I had a feeling that Leander hated him because he's universally loved.
Oh, yeah, come on. Yeah. Well, he makes funny movies, so, you know, can't be any fun.
That people like. That,
right.
The,
right.
The rest
that's
of culture
the important
likes.
Ingredient,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. Okay, let me go next, and then Leander, you can take us home. It looks like we lost Buster again, so we'll see if he comes back. But he reads his part. That's why I had him go first. See exactly why I had him go first. So I have been playing Super Mario Odyssey. I wish Buster was here because he might have played it. I played this game at PAX 2 years ago, maybe, and I didn't really find it to be all that fun. It's on the Nintendo Switch, I should mention. I played this level in the middle of the game. I didn't really understand the premise of the game, and so I didn't really know what I was doing, and I didn't really find it to be fun in any way. And then people started talking about how great it was when it came out, and I was like thinking to myself, you guys like this game? Like, I didn't really find it to be that enjoyable. I don't understand why people like this game so much. Well, I ended up buying it, and it sat on my shelf for probably 4 months, maybe longer, might have been 6 months. And I was looking for a game to play with my daughter. My daughter likes watching me play Nintendo games. And it's what a great way to spend time with your kids. Like, if right. you grew up playing video games.
You're going to ignore her for hours while you play a game.
No. We have a great time together. She tells me what to do in the game. And then, yeah, she's fixated on the screen and not complaining about, oh, I want this and I want that. And so it works for both her and for me. And plus, it's a great way to be allowed to play video games when you still have kids. Like, some guy was complaining to me the other day that he doesn't get to play video games anymore. I'm like, dude, you got to make your kids watch. Then you'll get to play games again. And anyway, so we started the game right from the very beginning, and I got into like the actual story and the premise of the game. Oh my gosh. This has turned into probably one of the most magical game experiences I've maybe ever had. Now, it's not the best game I've ever played, but it's up there with the best games I've ever played. It's certainly one of the best Mario, if not the best Mario game I have ever played. It is magical and whimsical, and Nintendo, they truly are the Disney of the video game world. They create these experiences that no one else can make. They make you feel like you're a kid again. And because they have such a long history with gaming, just like with Disney, they're able to take their back catalog of characters, sound effects, music, experiences, and rework them in new, more novel ways in this game. Like, for instance, the Mario Odyssey experience is a 3D experience, right? You're running around in 3D space, but you can go into these areas of the game that will turn into a 2D experience, and it takes you back into like the original Mario Brothers game, but they'll mix elements of that with elements of the new game. And there are so many points in the game where you're just sitting there playing, thinking to yourself, this is incredible. Like, the amount of creativity that went into this experience is unparalleled in the gaming world, in my experience. And I just couldn't be having more fun. So if you have a Nintendo Switch, even if you don't have a Nintendo Switch, I would say this game is good enough to get a Nintendo Switch just to play this game, which is the same thing I said about Nintendo's Zelda Breath of the Wild. That was another one of the best games I've ever played. And the first party titles from Nintendo are generally some of the best gaming experiences that you can have. They're safe to play with kids. So if you have kids, you don't have to worry about your kid wandering into the room or even watching you play games. It just keeps getting better and better and better. And I find myself surprised and delighted by all these old treasures that I have unearthed in the game one after another. So that's my pick. I can't get enough of Super Mario Odyssey. I've been spending like 10 hours a week playing it. And I don't have 10 hours a week. So for me, if you can pull 10 hours a week from me, you've got to have something special, because I don't just give my time away these days. That's my pick. Leander, what do you got? Take us home.
Okay, well, mine, I'm into these electric scooters, e-scooters. I went for a ride today on one, and I'm completely converted.
Are these the ones that you can rent around town?
Yeah, the share ones, yeah. So they've come back, they were banned from San Francisco for a few weeks, and the city has just allowed a couple of companies to come back in after there's this huge backlash. You know, you must have seen this in the news. People were vandalizing them, dumping them, taking a dump on them.
I was just going to say.
Well, they take a dump on everything out here.
Yeah, so it's just like everything else in San Francisco.
Covered in poo. So they've let a couple back in. I was heading to the gym, and I was late, and I was like, and I was looking at this big bag, and then there was one sitting right in front of me on the sidewalk. So I downloaded the app and fired it up, and the next thing you know, I'm whipping down the bike lane, you know, like a few blocks to the gym, and I got there in like in a nick of time. So it's fantastic. Yeah, I'm totally converted to these things. Like, it's so much fun. It's such a great way to get around the city. I'd love to see them everywhere, but of course that's not going to happen in San Francisco.
They are electric scooters, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And how fast do they go?
Well, this was going pretty good on the flat, but then when it got to the hill, it kind of really slowed down. It was actually sort of painful crawling up the hill. And uh-huh. I wonder whether this is like I got a dodgy one, because one I've driven previously, I rode a bird scooter previously, and that thing really flew, and it chugged up the hill pretty good. But this is a San Francisco hill, right? You know, so it's not super steep, but it was steep enough, and it was a little bit painful getting up the hill. But it worked pretty good. It was, you know, they're really, really. It's amazing, because I was, when I first got on, wobbling, a little bit, you know, unsure of my balance. But 2 minutes, you know, not even that, like, you know, 20 seconds in, instantly comfortable, completely feel at home on the thing, you know, felt very, very safe. And in the bike lanes, you know, it is safe. It doesn't, you don't feel vulnerable at all. Yeah, you know, like I was looking at them. There was an article on the web a few days ago about the difference in, you know, Santa Monica, which is down the coast here from San Francisco. And Santa Monica is like blanketed in scooters. There's scooters everywhere. And the city really wants to move people away from using cars. You know, there's a big debate about like the high school there or the schools there, you know, the amount of traffic that they generate for parents dropping off their kids. And they really want to see the kids taking these scooters. I mean, it's a perfect solution for getting kids to school. But, of course, they're worried about the infrastructure there. You know, like, are the bike lanes safe enough? Are they protected? The kids could do this. So there's a big debate. But in Santa Monica, the city council opened up the city. And you know, I don't think they've placed any restrictions on the number of scooters that are there. And so there's scooters everywhere. And they've also painted, like, these scooter corrals so that people just don't leave the scooter anywhere, you know, on the sidewalk or in the road. They park them in these designated spots, and whereas here in the city in San Francisco, you know, because of this big tech backlash, the city really wants to restrict what they're doing, and so it caps it already. It kneecaps the whole program, because you know it all depends on them being available, their availability, and being able to just hop on one and you know go where you want to go, and because there's so few, you know, I was looking on the map. I mean, there's a bunch around here where I work in the mission, but in my neighborhood there was like one. So in the morning, if tomorrow morning I want to get a scooter to work, it's going to be difficult. You know, I'm going to have to go find one. Which I think is a bit of a pity, really. I'd love to see these things everywhere. I think they're a great, great solution for the city.
How much does it cost to use these scooters?
Well, they have. I'm not 100% sure, because it was like the one ride I did, which is only a few blocks, was like $1.60. And they have some special, like, introductory pricing, which I'm on. So It's like, I think they said it was like $1. I think it's $1 to unlock it, $1 for the ride, and then, you know, a few cents per whatever.
Per block or something?
Per block, yeah. I'm not sure what it was. So actually, it must have been quite a few cents per block, because, you know, they managed to add 60
cents.
That's
not cheap, like $1.60 for a ride?
Let me see. I didn't actually, because I only looked at
it real
quick.
That's way more expensive than I would have guessed it would have been. But you didn't take it very far, so it sounds like your cost per block or whatever goes down the longer you go and you only went a few blocks. And if they're charging you $1 right off the bat to unlock it, and then, you know, 20 cents a block or something, it's probably 20 cents a block, Leander, if it costs you $1.60.
I think most of them charge by the minute or something like that. But I'm not
sure. That's what this thing says, $1 to unlock and 15 cents to ride per minute.
Ooh. So you're motivated to really scream down the road as fast as you could possibly go. No danger there.
Yeah, exactly. Don't stop the stop signs. Don't worry about red lights.
Can I tell you, you've talked about riding a scooter before, and I don't think there are many things that bring a smile to my face more than imagining you cruising down the road on a scooter, on a little tiny electric scooter.
Yeah. I had a giant gym bag, and I'm... The hairs through, you know, the wind is going through my bald head.
Okay, well, Buster is probably dead. He is no longer with us, so I'm guessing that he crashed his van somewhere, and we probably won't hear from him until he gets released from the hospital next week. So let's go ahead and wrap it up there. That's all the Cultcast we have for you guys this week. Hey, we're on Twitter. If you want to come say hi or talk to us about any of the stories you mentioned in today's show, I'm at Arifon. Leander is L. Caney. Buster is BST3R. Lewis is at Lewis Wallace. I might be up tonight for the pre-order squad on my Twitter. I'm thinking to myself, I should just pre-order the XR. I should just go for it, get one, and live that 10R lifestyle and see what it's all about. So I might be up with you guys tonight if you catch this episode in time. I'll see you there. This has been the Cultcast, the best 30-plus minute alpha conversation you're going to hear all week long. New episodes of the Cultcast come out every Thursday night. I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll see you guys next time. Or in the very exclusive Governor's Lounge. I'm wearing my silk robe right now, Lewis.
Yeah?
And there's nothing underneath.
Whoa.
Dude, we don't
want to
go there.
TMI.
Rich Italian silk robe, fez, golden tassels. That's all I've got. that's Mike Judge. I always thought that Mike Judge was the blonde-haired waiter in Office Space.
Blonde-haired waiter in Office Space.
You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, the with the flare?
Yeah. I always thought that was him, but that wasn't him, was it?
Hey,
you
know.
Two, get a room! That guy?
Yeah. Super,
kind of looks like Mike Judge.
California dude.
Hey, you too? That used to be me. I used to be that waiter. We used to have flair and stuff at the restaurant that I worked at.
Yeah. Todd Duffy had to as one. Tchotchke's waiter.
Whatever Todd happened to Duffy. That guy?
That might have been his best role.
It would suck to be in a position where you were desperate for acting work, but then you got a role like that guy got. It's the same story with Urkel. You get this role that you don't really probably want to do. It's this nerdy role. Like, it gets you this solid acting job, but then it ruins your career. It's the devil's bargain. Because you're getting what you want, but you don't want what you're getting.
And also, yeah, you ever see that movie Office Space? What? No, huh? No. And then somebody does, and they're like, yeah, I was the waiter. You're like, oh.
You're that really annoying dude from Office Space.
That's great, man.
You've become a meme. So you're not actually hireable in any other film because you've just become a meme of yourself.
Yeah, and now you're actually waiting on my table.
He shows up at your table. You're like, dude, I recognize you. He's got flair on.
Nice flair.
That would be the most delicious irony I've ever heard.